World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 100, we discuss the highs and lows of TNT's Champions League coverage, how money is polluting the sport we love, FIFA is up to some crazy ideas once again, and which cable company is increasing their rates. And we have a bunch of letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, 100 episodes since we've changed the format of the show. Now, if you went back from the first podcast we did on As World Soccer Talk, well, it would have been EPL Talk back then in 2006, we have to be over 1,000 episodes at least. Maybe even 2,000. It's a huge number, but 100 under the new format. And I don't know about you, Kartik. I mean, the old format was good in terms of the Premier League previews and reviews, but I really enjoy this one.
Yeah, I do too. And quite honestly, for those of you who might be newer to us, you can go back in our vault and listen to some interviews that are still timely. They're not necessarily time-sensitive interviews that we did between 2006 and 2010 or so, when that was the format of our show. So we've evolved with the times, but we still have a lot of good stuff historically that listeners might want to listen to between 2006 and 2010. And heck, if you want to reminisce about certain week match days and weeks in the Premier League, you can listen to those shows as well.
Yeah, the interviews. I really enjoyed doing those. They ran their course in terms of, I mean, there's only so many people you can interview. And the idea that we had was that we would interview just one person once, and that was it. And yeah, we'd go on. But we had John Terry that Richard Farley did, Paul Scholes that Kartik, you did, David Villa that I did. I mean, some and also, of course, commentators, Martin Tyler, Toby Charles. I mean, the Toby Charles one still stands a test of time, but there's some really, really good interviews for those wanting to go back and listen to thousands of episodes rather than just the last 100. All right, Kartik. So from this past week, there's been a lot of soccer. I don't know about you, but I've watched probably more soccer this past week than in a few weeks. And what for you stood out? Was there one match that was your favorite?
Oh boy, there were a lot of good matches. You know, I kind of it got a bad rap, but I kind of did enjoy the Atleti Barcelona match. But I would have to say, if there was a match that stood out for me, it was probably the Lazio Milan match. I thought that was the best played match I watched this week. That was a match that was on ESPN News at an odd time. I think it was about at noon or 12:05, something like that, on Sunday. And I ended up watching the whole thing. It was a very, very good match with a depleted Milan team. I thought both goals were quite good, even though the Milan goal took a deflection. Suso played a beautiful ball over the top to set that up. And then on the Lazio side, they were creating a lot of pressure, a lot of chances. Milan with a depleted back line. Zapata eventually made a mistake, which led to the Lazio equalizer. Mark Donaldson and Matteo Benetti as a commentary team now getting more and more comfortable with one another. I think they're both very good. I've been a big fan of Benetti's work when he was at BN, but he didn't necessarily have the chemistry and cadence down with Donaldson the first few weeks of the Serie A season. We're now three plus months into the start of the season, and they certainly have it down. And I thought this was just a good match to watch and a good match to listen to the commentators in.
Yeah, for me, it had to be the PSG-Liverpool match. Really just a emotional game, just kind of both teams going at it. It was just a really entertaining match to watch. The other one I would say that was a close call to that was, surprisingly, Huddersfield against Wolverhampton Wanderers on Sunday. And this was a match I was thinking going into this that Wolves would run the show, that they would control the match, control the tempo, control the possession. And it was the opposite. And for those listeners, myself included, they've pretty much written Huddersfield off. They played amazingly, Kartik. They, just in terms of their possession, the playing, the 1-2s, I mean, throughout the entire game, thoroughly deserved the 2-0 victory in this match and looked really, really good. Looked like they were a mid-table side.
Yeah, I have to say there's been a lot of lazy punditry about Huddersfield, and understanding how David Wagner wants his team to play and how they've played at times in the championship. Now, he's very pragmatic, and to get out of that division at the end, particularly in the playoffs that year, they kind of retreated and tried to play quite defensively. However, Wagner is a believer, and he's a Jurgen Klopp disciple, keep in mind, former U.S. international as well, I should point out. He is a believer that in order to defend, sometimes you have to press high and maintain possession in the other side's half, whether you're attacking or not. So that is his core management fundamental principle that I think has been forgotten, as we've seen just Huddersfield, because of their lack of quality, get shelled at times. But if they're on the front foot, if they get an early goal like they got from Moy in this match, they can dictate tempo and dictate midfield play against teams that are not quite at the level of a Manchester City or a Spurs, right? So I'm a little bit surprised, but I'm not shocked by that result and what you're saying about how Huddersfield performed.
Let's move on to Champions League, Kartik. Another week of Turner and Univision broadcasting this fantastic tournament. This was a week that many soccer fans in the US finally seemed to have enough to give, almost given up with TNT, only broadcasting one match on TV during each TV window. I mean, they've done this all season long, so it's no surprises. But this one was particularly aggravating for a lot of soccer fans out there. On Wednesday, especially, when you had PSG against Liverpool, PSV against Barcelona, Spurs against Inter, and many, many other matches all at the same time. So it gave TNT and Turner a difficult challenge to figure out which game to put on. They put on Spurs against Inter, partly probably because this is probably had the most riding on this game. Yes, PSG against Liverpool was the first leg was a very entertaining game, but Liverpool, even if they lost this game, which they did, could still go through. While the Spurs Inter game, Spurs really had to win this match to have any chance of going through. They've still got a ways to go. But overall, I can see why Turner did make this decision. At the same time, I can see why soccer fans in the US were upset. And they're upset because there's less choice available on television. As we know, as most of our listeners know too, and most of the games, well, actually all the games, but the majority games are going to be on Bleach Report Live, or you can switch to Univision or watch on Univision streaming platform. What was your take, Kartik? Did you sense this week more than others that there was kind of a lot of upset fans on social media?
I don't know. I wasn't really on social media during the game, so I'm not really sure. I actually enjoyed Turner's. I didn't see any of Wednesday. Let me preface everything by saying that. Had Bleacher Report Live at my desk watching Liverpool PSG, so I missed all the other excitement. And I realized that game was not on TNT. It was on Univision Deportes, though.
And Univision.
Or on Unimas, yeah. So I thought Tuesday, the discussion before the early game, from noon to one, was pretty good in the studio. This isn't a shot at Kate Abdo, but maybe Stuart Holden, being a former player, just didn't want to get into any of the nonsense that usually happens in that studio. But I think maybe it had less to do with Abdo's absence and more to do with them all being co-located, right, in one place. Mm-hmm. Tim Howard is making stronger points.
Let me just jump in there, Kartik. Kate Abdo, I like a lot. I mean, she's a smart woman. She knows the game. She's multilingual. She's a good presenter. But I didn't miss her this week, Kartik. I mean, she was out sick.
I didn't at all.
And I thought it was tighter. I thought it was tighter having those guys on the set in one studio. It was better overall. So, I mean, that's something for Turner to consider. But then again, I'm sure there's going to be weeks where, I mean, it might be Kate's in the studio and Stuart Holden isn't. I thought it was much, much better, much, much tighter, and it flowed better. There was no awkward switches from one studio to the other. And at the end of the day, you got more analysis. You got more analysis tighter without having to switch, and you lose, like, say, 10 or 20 seconds with kind of the transition. But going back to what you were saying about Tim Howard.
Yeah, I thought Tim Howard was making better and tighter points about the actual action on the pitch in the Tuesday pregame, Tuesday halftime of the first match, the Ajax match, and then onward to the postgame on Tuesday evening. I thought he had a really good really good Tuesday. Mouadou is he doesn't make as many strong points, but it seems like with three other guys in the studio with him,
he's
gotten better. And I thought Holden was fine as a presenter, and Nash made some pretty good points. So I thought it was tighter. I do think, though, this issue of what game they show, what match they show, is a big one, because I think from the second they announced Inter versus Spurs Inter match, instead of PSG Liverpool, there were questions asked. Was that a decision to try and push people towards streaming, towards buying the Game Pass, which would be $2.99 a game? Mm-hmm. If you're not a Bleacher BR Live subscriber, there were a lot of concerns about BR Live after last weekend's. I know you don't follow golf, but the debacle from the coverage of the match, where they've had to refund a bunch of money to people. So there's been a lot of concern about that and them not showing these matches. And it seems like because they have put themselves in this box, Chris, where they are only showing one match because let's face it, the early matches generally don't have your high profile games.
Studs.
So,
right.
Yeah. So they're showing one match per window, per day. So two matches in the prime windows on a given match day, there is going to be this problem. And unless they change that, it doesn't matter how good their ancillary coverage is. It doesn't matter how good their studio shows are. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how good the other things they do around their coverage are. They are going to get complaints because there is a certain expectation after the number of matches Fox provided over the air, even if their coverage wasn't very good. And I think TNT's coverage is better. At this point, this week, I'm going to say they're much better.
Miles better.
I know.
Miles better. Yeah. So,
but the concern is about the number of games they're showing. So this is something that Turner has to address.
Yeah, it's an interesting business model, and it's still early days. And I'm sure Turner's still looking at the numbers, going, okay, is this working? And right now, they're the only ones that know if it's working or not in terms of Bleacher Report Live. They're not sharing the number of subscribers. They're not sharing the number any metrics coming out of there. So maybe the strategy is working. Maybe it's forcing people that want to watch Liverpool against PSG to switch to BR Live and watch it through there. Or maybe it's Univision that's actually benefiting from this. And Univision Deportes Network is getting a lot more views.
Or Fubo and Sling.
Or Fubo and Sling. Right, exactly.
Benefiting.
So the strategy, we'll have to wait and see what happens there. I mean, in the interview we did with Travis Remke a couple of weeks ago, he did say that there could be a possibility that there will be more games on television. So that was kind of a possibility. He didn't rule it out. He didn't say, okay, it's TNT all season long, no matter what. We're sticking to that. So that's maybe some wiggle room there. But at the end of the day, it's essentially the television product on TNT is kind of a sweetener, an appetizer, a gateway drug to try to encourage people to go ahead and sign up for BR Live to get the full experience. And whether or not that works, again, we'll have to wait and see. Maybe Turner changes their mind next season. But at this point in time, that's the strategy that they've gone with. And even with the Europa League, every single game except for the final on BR Live. So that's the way to go. Now, is that strategy ahead of its time? I mean, we've talked about BR Live having issues going back to the match. But even Tuesday's broadcast, too, the first 5 minutes of all the games in the Champions League, there was a message that popped up that said they were having technical difficulties. And after minute five, it was fine and it was all good. Wednesday seemed to be fine, too. So we'll have to wait and see. But the coverage, Kartik, is much, much better. I mean, you can tell that Turner is putting a lot of time and preparation into this. Even Tuesday, just as one example, on Tuesday pre-match, we had a really good segment about on the pre-match analysis about Bonucci's passing ability. And they focused in on that. They showed some clips and they just talked about that. And that was really kind of talking about a player that perhaps you don't hear as much about, because you're always hearing about whether it's Ronaldo or Dybala or whoever it is. But Bonucci was a good segment. They also had a segment where they had Stu Holden and Steve Nash trying to imitate Cristiano Ronaldo's goal against Man United. Which I enjoyed. To me, it shows how difficult the pass is and the strike. And that was something, whether it's for new fans or old fans, something we can take away from that and go, okay, that's actually good to actually show that, just to show how challenging that is.
This will show the kind of open minds that you and I have, because they – teased that segment, and I thought, oh gosh, this is going to be another stupid thing. Right. This was on the 12 o'clock Eastern Time pregame. It was the first show of the week on Turner. They come back after the commercial on TNT. They come back after the commercial, and I was actually captivated. I took the same reaction as you, Chris. My gosh, this shows the level of difficulty and skill Ronaldo has, and this is the most demonstrative way you can do it. See, but this is the difference between them and Fox. So Fox, I think, would just kind of throw together their production at the last minute for the Champions League. Now, granted, they have other things in this sport they're covering in the interim. And in the case of TNT, this is the only soccer they cover. So they had 3 weeks from the last match day to essentially put together a segment like that, throw Nash and Holden out on a pitch and tape that. So it also helps, and this is something we say about NBC a lot. It also helps when you have one soccer property you're focusing on, and I think that segment demonstrated that to us because we could say, oh, well, we never got something that insightful from Fox, which is true, but part of it is Fox would have had the Bundesliga 2 days earlier to cover. They would have had MLS 2 days earlier. They would have had internationals the previous week to cover. So it kind of helps when you have a network that doesn't have that level of commitment to other soccer properties.
Yeah, and one more thing about Tuesday pre-match was that they had the one-on-one interview with Lukaku, which I thought was really good too, because it was more of a not about the football so much, but more about the individual, and kind of opened Lukaku up. And then right after that interview, the panel had a discussion about what Lukaku was really meaning when he was saying certain things, like reading between the lines about whether or not he's a fan of Mourinho's style, and that was enlightening too. So to me, the actual coverage, the pre-match, halftime, post-match, it's on song. It's not at an NBC level, but it's actually in some ways it's probably better than NBC, but they've got more liberty to have more time to have more different discussions. It's up there. I really enjoy the coverage, and that's why I led off in the beginning too. I think the biggest complaint that people are having about Turner Sports is not about the coverage, but it's about the accessibility to the games. And the accessibility to the games, if you're willing to do streaming, you've got everything, and it's $10 a month. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. But for those people who want to watch the games on television, or who don't have good Wi-Fi, or just want to stick to watching it on television, that's where the issue is, and that's a big issue, and it's something that I think as times are changing, as people are moving more and more to streaming, those complaints may become less and less as time goes on, but that could be, at the end of this rights cycle, 2.5 years from now.
Yeah, certainly.
So the other thing, Kartik, from this past week, I saw a lot of games, Liga MX games, championship games, more Premier League matches, more Champions League matches, etc. The one thing that was, it was incredible to watch, sad to see, but was River Boca. And this is the game that was on Saturday. I was traveling back from Orlando, and I knew I would have missed the first half. So I got home, switched on the television, switched on Fox Deportes, getting ready for the second half. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking on the screen, and I'm like, wait a second, the game's not being played. There's got to be something that happened. And I could not stop watching this broadcast. It was like a Spanish telenovela. It was, in terms of the drama, everything that was happening, showing kind of the clips of the bus being smashed up, which was horrible. But the reaction kind of in the stadium with the players, feeling the pains and feeling kind of being, whether it's the tear gas or just the shock. It was like watching a movie. In terms of the way that it developed and whether the game was going to be on, whether the game was going to be off, and just the discussion. And even though, again, I don't speak Spanish, I don't understand Spanish, I must have had this on for about probably 2 to 3 hours, just watching, seeing the developments of what happened, just riveted to this entire broadcast, and upset that the game was going to be postponed, especially making the fans wait more than 3 hours in the stadium for the decision to be made. But just really kind of watching this, and then same thing again on Sunday, tuning in, thinking, okay, the game's going to be played, and again, the game was not played, and just an amazing, weird, strange weekend. Sad to see, but television wise, it was must see television. Now, Kartik, did you watch this one?
I tuned them both out when I knew that the matches were postponed. So, postponed on Saturday, on Sunday, essentially shelved for 2 weekends while we figure out what's going to happen, whether it's played in Paraguay or Doha or wherever, or whether Boca plays at all, right? That's right. Still up in the air.
Yeah.
I tuned into a lot of the coverage in the written press, but I did not. Once I knew the match wasn't taking place, I shut it off on Saturday and Sunday. I never turned it on once I realized that the match wasn't taking place.
Yeah, and we'll get more into the news segment about what happens next with this game. But it was even though the game was not played, it was just it was fascinating television just watching this unfold. It just really was. Kartik, what about you? Any other matches that stood out for you this past week?
Matches, no. But what did stand out for me is an amount of advertising I saw for other soccer and for DAZN over the weekend. So starting on Friday with the Leverkusen-Stuttgart game on FS1 or on FS2, I saw a lot of ads for Major League Soccer for the Sporting Kansas City-Portland Timbers match on Sunday night. Then you get to the weekend on NBC, and DAZN now is advertising during the matches, and then also even bought a block in one of the matches. I think it was the Spurs Chelsea match, or no, it was the City West Ham match, where they were sponsoring the score bug in the corner during NBC's broadcast. DAZN has gotten much more aggressive about their advertising, I've noticed, in the last week in the United States, and they're making moves abroad now. Brazil is another place where another market they're entering. So that was really interesting. I did not see a single DAZN ad watching college football or college basketball on ESPN all weekend, but I saw them constantly on NBC, and I saw a few on TNT on Tuesday, I want to say, whether those were placed by cable companies or were direct ads with TNT.
That's the thing, though, too, Kartik. I mean, listeners can definitely let us know, but part of me thinks that it might be Fubo. So Fubo has a dynamic ad engine. So as we're watching commercials, it may not be the same commercials that are on linear television. Sometimes Fubo will have inserting their own commercials in there, or they will be selling their own commercial spots. So the DAZN ones, same as you, Kartik, whether it was NBC or whether it was TNT, all weekend long.
I watched over the air, though.
Oh, okay.
They were on television on TNT, and as I said, they sponsored the score bug on NBC.
That's true.
One of the matches.
Yeah.
So they're aggressively advertising. They're not placing ads on ESPN, which we don't need to get into it, but that makes sense.
Right.
Why that wouldn't be happening. Speaking of ESPN, I wanted to mention there was an incredible amount of advertising for their MLS Cup playoff match between Atlanta and New York. I know MLS fans like to complain that the league doesn't get promoted. ESPN ran ads beginning during the Mississippi State Ole Miss Egg Bowl match on Thursday night throughout the weekend on college football. And I watched some college basketball games on ESPN as well. Tennessee, Kansas, there was an MLS Cup playoffs ad. So they ran ads aggressively during their college sporting properties for that match. Part of it might be the appeal of Atlanta to college sports fans, Atlanta United. But when we get into the television ratings segment, we'll talk about whether that worked or not. But there was an incredible – I've never seen so many ads for MLS, honestly, as I did this weekend on ESPN.
That's good news. Good news. And also, I even saw a Champions League ad on TBS during, I think, on Thanksgiving or around about then.
During a movie?
I think it was just during a regular broadcast, so it might have been probably a TV series or something like that, but either a movie or TV series for BR Live and TNT's broadcast of the Champions League. So it's good. It's good to see that, Kartik, that these broadcasters are promoting their soccer properties. Hopefully we'll get more and more viewers. And like Kartik said, we'll get to that in a little bit in the TV ratings segment. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, so I think everybody saw this over the weekend that FIFA is considering a proposal to stage a World Cup every 2 years. CONMEBOL has proposed this. FIFA is exploring the possibility of staging the World Cup every 2 years rather than every four, Alejandro Dominguez, the president of CONMEBOL, confirmed.
All right, Kartik, let's move on to the next item. And that's talking about the River Plate Boca Juniors Copa Libertadores final second leg, which opened up a whole bunch of different questions because of this game and what happened after it. So as we talked about in the first segment, the game was postponed due to fan violence and the Boca Juniors bus getting smashed up to pieces and a player getting injured. Tear gas, the effects of tear gas on the players. So Boca Juniors and River Plate decided to go ahead and cancel the game, play it on Sunday. And then Sunday, Boca Juniors said that they still weren't ready to play. They were still feeling the after effects of the tear gas, etc. So then the question became, okay, so if where do we go next? Do we play the game in Argentina or do we play the game overseas? There was discussion about Miami as a possible destination, and also I think Paraguay, and the latest is Doha. It looks like Doha is going to be the destination for this second leg of the game. Doha allegedly offering millions and millions of dollars to River Plate and Boca Juniors to go ahead and have this game played in Doha. And yeah, at the end of the day, Kartik, I mean, for me personally, I don't feel good about this because what happened was really something that was just unfortunate in terms of the violence that happened. But to me, like, why can't this game be played in at the Estadio Monumental with increased security? Only the home fans are allowed in the stadium, but I mean, find a way to get the players into the stadium safely and play the game. But what it seems to be, Kartik, to me at least, is that this has turned into a cash cow. I think both River and Boca looking at this going in terms of the kind of the expectations and kind of how big this game is, that now all of a sudden you've got whether it's Miami or whether it's Doha or whether it's Paraguay, I think even Italy, I think one of the clubs in Italy offered, you mean, millions and millions of dollars for these teams to go ahead and play the game overseas. And to me, it leaves a sour taste in my mouth because now it's turned into, you mean, basically a money-grabbing exercise, or so it seems.
So I think at first on Monday when CONMEBOL announced they were going to move the match out of Buenos Aires, the second leg, we thought, okay, well, I guess there's a reason for it, even though I tend to agree with their sentiments that they should just let things calm down, increase security, and play it. But then by Monday night, I think we realized this was becoming like an absolute bidding war for a one-off match that was going to line the coffers of the Latin American Confederation, the South American Confederation, a confederation which already has been in and out of trouble in the last 5 years, in turmoil in terms of corruption. So. And then to see Doha and Dubai emerge as potential destinations, now Doha, if they played it in Asuncion, if they played it in Paraguay, I think we would probably accept it, even though we're still thinking, okay, maybe it could have been played in Buenos Aires. But this is just another indictment of where football is going in general, along with so many other things happening in the sport at this time.
Yeah, the shame of this, Kartik, is that this was the most highly anticipated Copa Libertadores game, probably ever, final ever. I mean, you had River Boca, the really great, entertaining first leg, 2-2, and everything going into the second leg. So it's putting the Copa Libertadores in a good light, CONMEBOL in a good light, River Boca in a good light globally. I mean, a lot of people were tuning in to watch this game. And then this happened, which has the opposite effect, which then makes CONMEBOL and the Copa Libertadores look like a second-rate organization. A lot of questions about River and Boca. And to me, this is a huge opportunity for those two teams and the Copa Libertadores to really gain a new audience. And it could have been a lot of English language viewers, too, tuning in to see what this whole thing was about. And as basically on those lines, you had Fox Deportes, who has the Spanish language rights in the United States. The question came up on social media, okay, well, who has the English language rights to this? And why wasn't this game shown in English language? Well, Fox Sports has the rights in both English and Spanish. They haven't televised any of the tournaments in English. It's all been in Spanish. This second leg would be a great opportunity for Fox Sports to maybe put the game on FS1 or FS2 or, you know, one of the English channels so that we can actually get to see this, for those who don't have Fox supporters. So that was a question that came up, and hopefully Fox Sports will show it. The other thing I was thinking about too is with DAZN spending so much money on advertising, and also as we reported in last week's episode, rumors about them offering lots of money to the different broadcasters out there, whether or not Fox Sports would want to sublicense this game in English to someone like DAZN so they could actually stream this one-time event. That could be a possibility too.
Yeah, it'd be a great entry for DAZN into the soccer market. They're trying, but this would be a great one-off, less risk than taking on a sub-license of a league in Europe, for example.
But that's the other thing, though, Kartik, about this, about the future, then, of the TV rights, because the TV rights for Copa Libertadores are up at the end of this month, in December 2018, and they're up for bidding. But if I'm a broadcaster, and I'm thinking, hey, well, should I go ahead and bid on Copa Libertadores? But then having seen this disaster, and having seen what a mess this is, I mean, two games cancelled, the third game has to be played in the next week or so, somewhere, we don't know where it's going to be yet. It seems to be very disorganized. Even the game itself, the game on the Saturday, they said, okay, right, the game was going to be off. Then it was on. Then it was off. I mean, it just in the space of basically a couple of hours, nobody knew if the game was going to be played or not. Even Sunday, all the fans, 70,000 fans show up at the stadium. They're all in the stadium waiting. They hear that the game is going to be on. Then a little bit later, they hear, and they actually have the trainer on the pitch, putting the cones down, getting ready for warm-ups. The fans started singing and chanting. And then all of a sudden, they're told that, okay, no, the game is going to be postponed. Just a not a good look for CONMEBOL, not a good look for Copa Libertadores. And if I'm a broadcaster, I'm going to be thinking about that. Okay, and does that devalue the actual price of these rights? Because you can't guarantee that this whole thing is going to be organized in a way where the game's going to be shown. I mean, that's the thing about the Champions League or the Premier League, is that you can set your watch to it. You know exactly what time the game's going to be played. Yeah, and kick off at that precise moment. You don't get this kind of drama, this telenovela, which is interesting to watch, but as a neutral. But if I'm a broadcaster, I'm upset because I've put a lot of resources into broadcasting this match, only for it not to have played.
Those of us who watch a lot of Major League Soccer are used to, and U.S. men's national team are used to matches not kicking off when they're scheduled to. So it's like it's a European league thing where if the kickoff time is advertised as 3:30 local time, like it is in the Bundesliga, the matches kick off at 3:30. Right. Again, there was a lot of confusion when the Atlanta-New York game was going to kick off on ESPN on Sunday. It ended up kicking off around 5:22 Eastern time when it was advertised as 5:00. So I'm used to those frustrations, yeah. Unfortunately.
I don't like that. To me, it's
I don't either.
It's a little bit trickery. It's kind of just trying to get you to tune in to the pre-match. And I don't like it at all. I mean, it always rubs me the wrong way. I'm like, okay, if you say the match is kicking off at 5, kick off at 5. And sometimes there could be things happening as far as maybe a broadcast running late. I understand. But all right, Kartik, let's move on to the next news item.
Yeah, Stu Holden and Steve Nash heading to Spain next match day to call the Barcelona Spurs match from the Camp Nou. Holden and Nash will be doing the pre-match, halftime, and post-match from the stadium, as well as live commentary of the game. So it'll be their first experience doing this. And Holden, as the lead commentator, been the co-commentator even for a World Cup final. He's never, to my knowledge, been the lead commentator, but he auditioned pretty well in the studio for my liking on Tuesday and Wednesday this week with Turner. This is going to be interesting. This is the first time they've done this, and this shows a commitment level that, quite honestly, Fox did not have at the very end with the Champions League.
Wow, or even the beginning. It got worse at the end, but even
right,
the
right.
But this one will be interesting too, because it probably means that the Spurs Barcelona game will be the one that's on television. Although it hasn't been confirmed yet, but it's probably very likely that that match will be the TV broadcast on TNT. But it'll be interesting. That's for sure. On to other news, IMG has agreed a new three-year deal with the Premier League for global in-flight and cruise ship media rights, which will once again include live coverage on both Sport 24 and Sport 24 Extra, the company's 24/7 sports channel. The new agreement, which covers the 2019 to 2020 season, plus all the way through to the 2021-22 season, takes the relationship with the Premier League for in-flight and cruise ship rights for 20 years, while also reaching the decade mark for Sport 24, which launched in 2012. From personal experience, Kartik, when I've gone on a cruise ship, in the Caribbean, Sport 24, I'm like, even though I'm on vacation, I'm like hooked on it. It's a great channel, shows a lot of the Premier League coverage, Premier League television coverage, shows the matches, and for those who do go on a cruise or go on a kind of a long flight, if you see that you have Sport 24, tune in because you'll be able to watch a ton of soccer, and now with the Premier League all the way through to 2022, that's good news. And then Kartik, one more news item before we move on.
Yeah, so Comcast is raising its bills again. Even if you're under contract, even if you're an existing Comcast subscriber, you're going to pay $2 more for your broadcast package. You're going to pay $1.50 more for your additional sports pack per month. This is due in large part, Comcast claims, to increase less subscribers. But what it probably does, Chris, let's be honest about it, is creates an even greater problem where they're going to need to raise rates again if that's the rationale, because more people will cut the cord.
All right, let's move on to TV ratings. So Kartik, in that first segment, you asked a question and said, with all the advertising on television that MLS has been doing on ESPN, well, ESPN advertising the MLS game between Atlanta and New York Red Bulls on Sunday, hoping that people would tune in, what's your reaction on the number, and did that strategy work?
334,000, I think, is decent given what we've seen for MLS playoff matches. But I don't know that the strategy worked, because I would have preferred to have seen something in the 400s or 500s, given it was a Sunday at 5 o'clock. But I don't think it backfired. I don't think the number is by any means embarrassing. There were just four numbers all around for soccer this weekend. I mean, one thing that stood out for me, Chris, and maybe this is because we're in South Florida and we see the amount of advertising BN is doing, particularly while they're under the gun with these being dropped by cable providers and satellite providers, is only 100,000 for Atleti Barca on the English channel of BN. That is much lower than it would have been a year ago. And I think it's less than half of what it would have been a year ago. So in addition to the fact that they've lost about half their television subscribers, I think they're just losing in general awareness and recognition. With that number, really frightens me, that 100,000.
Yeah, for me, I have a different take on that, and that is that usually the numbers on the English language side versus the Spanish language side on beIN Sports, the Spanish language side is usually 2 to 3 times greater. So even though we don't have the number of the beIN Sports en Español number for the Atleti Barcelona game, I would guesstimate it would be probably between 200,000 to 300,000 people watching that on that channel. So combined with English, you've got an audience of approximately 400,000 people tuning into Atleti against Barcelona, which is greater than most of the Premier League matches, greater than the MLS match that's on ESPN. So to me, that could be a positive. But again, we don't know what that number is, so it's hard to say. But based on from the last several years, what we've seen with those games is that the Spanish language is 2 to 3 times greater. So overall, I think it's pretty good. We'll have all the numbers. So from Major League Soccer, the Premier League, La Liga, etc., Liga MX, on the worldsoccertalk.com website in the next 24 hours. So you can see the full list of how your game or how your club or how your league did against the other ones. Moving on to listener mailbag, Kartik, and some of our best content recently has come from you, the listeners. You guys rock. Definitely keep on coming with the feedback. We really appreciate it. And if you can, try to keep them as brief as possible. So don't go into kind of a whole dissertation. The briefer the better, but we definitely value your feedback. The first up is Tom Save the Crew. He says, MLS is hurting the national team same as in years gone by, just like how the Scottish Premier League hurt the national team, as did the English Premier League. The top teams are bringing in foreign players and concentrating less on bringing in young American talent. In response to Chris saying more weekday games was good for MLS from a business TV standpoint, and this is coming from somebody who watches the majority of games on TV because I can't travel to Colombia every other week. I think it means Columbus every week, maybe. Soccer is a spectator sport, not a TV show. Stop hurting the fans who spend their hard-earned money to go to games. And Kartik, I get his kind of his analysis there too. I mean, he's obviously a Crew fan who likes to go into the games, probably has a good experience going to those weekend matches. And now all of a sudden, looking at 2019, it looks very likely that it'll be a lot more weekday matches, or weeknight matches, which are more difficult to get to. It depends at the end of the day what Major League Soccer wants to be. Does it want to be a TV property? Does it want to be a TV league? Or does it want to be a kind of an attendance, kind of a supporter-based league? And as of today, it's definitely focused on the supporters. The average attendances, even though it's, depending what numbers you look at, are pretty decent. But from the TV perspective, we know that definitely there's a huge opportunity to grow there. And that's why MLS is making these changes, or getting ready to hopefully propose these changes and pass them to make them more into a TV league. But I can understand Tom's point of view in terms of, you mean, for the local fan or the fan in that area, it's definitely going to hurt them. Now, next up is Ritik, and he says, hey, guys, I started listening to the podcast a few months ago, and I love it. I'm glad that Kartik asked the La Liga executive if they would consider bringing in matches involving teams other than the two super clubs, Barcelona and Real Madrid, to the States. Even though I watch English football every week, I have a soft spot for Valencia, even though I can't watch them through beIN Sports. Having a Sevilla Real Betis or Valencia Villarreal derby would be great to those like myself who appreciate competitive clubs that are not the same old Barca and Madrid that everyone else knows and follows. I also hope that Fox or ESPN will carry the next TV rights so we can finally see over-the-air La Liga games. Thanks so much. What's your thoughts on that, Kartik?
Yeah, it would be great if they were somebody else other than Real Madrid and Barcelona brought to the States if they do these games. Again, going back to the first comment by Tom Save the Crew, I still believe football is a spectator sport, and I have a fundamental disagreement with moving matches out of home grounds to some other location, because some fan base that's not really connected to those clubs. They might think they are, but they're not really connected to those clubs in a way that a hardcore local supporter would be, is wants to spend more money to see matches. But if we are going to go down that road, which it appears we are, then I would like to see clubs like Valencia, which I think would have an appeal to the American audience because of their supporters' culture. Valencia's supporters' culture is much more robust than Real Madrid or Barcelona, from my perspective. That people can disagree with me on that, but I think Valencia is a really cool club. But to expose those sorts of clubs to the American market would be neat if we're going to go down that road.
Yeah, I think part of it, though, too, Kartik, is what does it mean to have a local club? So, for example, in South Florida, in the Miami area, to me, I mean, there's no Major League Soccer team yet in business. There will be one probably in the next year to 2 years. But I'm looking at Real Madrid, and I'm looking at Real Madrid. Real Madrid has more of a connection with Miami than any Major League Soccer club has. So in the past, say, 5 years, Real Madrid's probably been here 4 times, have played several friendlies, ICC games, etc. So if you're a Real Madrid fan, you have more of a connection to that club as your local club, in quotation marks, because they've been there. You've seen them. How many Major League Soccer teams have played in Miami in the past 4 or 5 years, whether friendlies or games or pickup games?
Yeah, but again, I mean, this is part of the elitism of some fans. It has to be a first division club. Now, I know we don't have Pro Rel in the United States, but there is a local club everywhere in the United States you can go and go to matches for. Every single place. Name a place, I'll find you a club. Now, they're not MLS clubs, so maybe they don't meet your standard, which means you kind of want – and this is the thing also. I mean, people rave about the Premier League, but by and large, they support the top 5 or 6 clubs in that league. I mean, you don't see many Swansea supporters like you or Huddersfield supporters running around. So I think it's people want to have their cake and eat it too when they have make this argument about, oh, well, we want to see the best and we want an MLS club. Well, you have local football. You have local football even in places like Boise and Topeka and Wichita.
But what
go support your local club.
But Kartik, what if you live in Boston and you live in Boston and you look at your local club and you go, this club's a mess. New England Revolutions. There's been no investment in this. They played at an NFL stadium. The team is pretty bad. I mean, there's very little. I mean, the fan base is not existent. But I mean, what do you say to people in Boston? Do you go support your team even if they suck? I mean, and you have no choice. I mean, that's the only club that you have to support.
No, there are other clubs in Boston. There's clubs in Fall River. There are clubs in Providence. There are football clubs everywhere. It's like in the UK, someone saying, hey, you can't support Huddersfield. You have to support Leeds because it's only 20 miles away and it's a bigger club.
Yeah, but who would you support in Boston if you don't support the Revolution?
Yeah, you can support Boston City, which is an NPSL club that has actually gone to Brazil and played matches in Brazil and has brought in some interesting players. You have that option, and there are other local clubs in that market as well. Yeah. There are local clubs everywhere in this country, and it's the same thing as in the UK. It would be like saying, well, if you're in Manchester, Greater Manchester, you can't be a Bolton fan or you can't be an Oldham Athletic fan, you can't be a Bury fan. You have to support Manchester United or Manchester City because that's the top level. Fans in Europe do not have that mentality. Part of the problem is the American fan being exposed, I think, to sport, not just football, but sports in general as a TV property and saying, well, I have to support the best. So that's I think that's part of the mentality. That's the problem.
I don't think it's that, though, Kartik. I mean, to me, it's what you're attracted to, and it's not necessarily the best. So I think in last week's podcast, there was somebody that mentioned that they're a Grimsby Town supporter, and for whatever reason, that person has a connection to Grimsby, even though he or she lives in the United States, and there might be something about the history of the club. There's an affinity to that club, or whatever. I mean, we've got Portsmouth fans in Georgia. We've got, I mean, all sorts of fans of different clubs for different reasons. And to me, at the end of the day, if you have a local club, great, but it doesn't mean that that club has to earn the right for a fan to feel connected to that club. And in Miami, just as one example, because we live in this area, is that we've had no Major League Soccer teams here. I mean, none of these teams come into the area to practice or play games or to try to attract an audience. And yes, there are local clubs in kind of lower division soccer here. But that doesn't mean that fans have to gravitate to those teams, and that's the only teams that they can support. And to me, Real Madrid has done the miles, and just as one example, I mean, maybe that's probably a bad example because they're a big club, but they've done the miles. They've come to this area trying to attract fans, and I'm sure they've attracted a ton of fans that weren't into them before.
My actual point is, how fair is it if you're a Girona fan in Girona, a club that was in the lower divisions for years, okay? And it's a Catalan club, and they have a smallish supporter space. But how fair is it to then say, well, we're going to take your match? So imagine it's your Major League Soccer club in Miami, and suddenly a home match is moved to Tokyo. Because that sort of thing actually has been happening in college football, where team matches are moved to Dublin or to other places. And I guess it's now happening in the NFL with London. How do you feel about that? If one of your matches, and it's not your match against New England, it's your match against Atlanta or Seattle, the one time you get to see Seattle a year, is moved to Tokyo. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, but in the Girona example, I mean, the club's getting millions of dollars for this game that they can take and reinvest that in, I mean, new players.
Well,
new
facilities. I get all that.
But the fans themselves, so 1,500 fans are going to be getting free transportation, free flights from Girona to Miami to watch the game for free. So to me, as a club, if a club says, okay, we're going to do it, and the supporters say, okay, free flight to Miami in January when it's freezing in Spain, yeah, we'll go. We'll check it out.
There might be some, but I think they would still you're taking the fundamental experience of a home match against the biggest club in their region, and really the club that exemplifies Catalonia, and you're moving it to a foreign country. That's the issue. We're talking about supporters versus television, supporters versus money, and money and television are winning out. I'm not naive to this. These sorts of matches are going to happen, and we're probably going to have a World Cup or some sort of international event every 2 years, to go back to that news item. But I don't think it's good for the fundamental spirit of the sport. And I'm sorry, people in the United States, you know, these clubs are not your clubs. They belong to the communities they're from. You can support them, but they're not your clubs.
Yeah, I disagree there too, Kartik. I don't think that from in the old days, yeah, definitely. But clubs, I mean, Manchester City is a global club. It's, yes, they have roots in Manchester City. They've the history in Manchester. But to me, that's such a global club that, I mean, players from around the world, fans from around the world, millions of fans. I mean, there's more fans, more Manchester City fans outside of England than there are in England. And to me, it's a global club. It's yes, they play their games in Manchester, and they have the history in Manchester, and they've invested in Manchester. But that's their only connection to Manchester. The rest of the world are, I mean, attracted to that club for many different reasons.
Correct, but PSG and Manchester City have been bought by essentially nation states as propaganda arms for those countries. That's where we've gone. And again, I'm not saying that it's gonna end and we need to put a stop to it. Well, we should have put a stop to it, but we didn't. So it is what it is. But those clubs are still their supporters. The people who spend the most money on them, the people who go to the matches, are still locally based supporters. And I think there's a tendency in the United States to forget that.
All right, well, congratulations to Rittich for opening up a can of worms here. But it's good, though, too. And like I said before, too, in terms of some of our best content recently have come from you, the listeners, to go ahead and kind of share your viewpoints, and we get to express ours, too. So let's move on to just two more items from the listeners. First up is Anthony Bello. He says, "Hi, guys. I have a couple of topics I want to bring up. First, the MLS playoff. I believe going to one match instead of two legs is a lot better for the league. One-offs provide more drama, and they would prevent a situation where one team wins the first leg big time, and then the second leg is going to get bad ratings. Also, I know this has nothing to do with soccer, but did you see all of the problems that Bleacher Report had with the Tiger Woods Phil Mickelson match, a golf match? Between the problems with this and the problems with the Champions League, I was wondering what you guys thought about Bleacher Report and the problems with streaming. Or are we still at the point where big events on streaming only are going to jam up systems?" And to me, Kartik, on this one, we've experienced this, I think, through every streaming platform, whether it's Sling TV, Fubo, Fox Soccer, .TV, Fox Soccer Match Pass. I think they've all had an issue where they've had some big event and it crashes. So yeah. that's not new. I think that's ESPN Plus is probably one of the few that have not had any of these issues. But it's one of those things. It happens. It's learning curves. So that's a shame. Hopefully it won't happen again. But yeah. So that's my take on it. Hopefully again when they have some big event like this, I mean, they'll be better prepared, and mistakes like this won't happen again.
Yeah, the thing that we learned with the Fubo crash during, I think it was Copa America in 2016, and then Sling had something similar happen, and NBC Sports Gold, the first time they had a Spurs match or a United match, it was the first time they had a big club on Gold, is that you never were quite prepared for the eventuality of having a high volume of users. So I guess Bleacher Report, they had spent months preparing for this match, selling it, but maybe they just didn't have the bandwidth. Now, there were problems with the pay-per-view broadcast as well that was shown over the air on television. I don't know if that was related to the same thing. I guess it was.
Yeah.
But that's unfortunate. Really quickly, Anthony, on the single leg versus two legs, I'm torn on this because I like the two leg ties, but the thing that's happened in MLS is more often than not, because of the parity in the league, largely enforced parity by league rules, you are seeing the team that gets the first leg win the tie And that's that's the team which had less points in the regular season. You're seeing that more often than you should in the league. And what we had, not this season, because I think the matches were pretty poor, the play-in round, if you want to call it that, the 3 versus 6 and the 4 versus 5. But what we've had in past years is those matches have tended to be more dramatic and more exciting because they're one-off matches. And they're at the venue of the team that did have the better regular season record. So I'm going to wait and see if this works. I don't know that it's going to work, but based on some of our experiences, it probably will be an improvement.
All right, Matt says this is the last comment, and he says this is in regards to last week's discussion that I think Kartik, you and I had an argument about MLS and the Premier League and kind of the playing levels. But Matt says, wow, just listening to the most recent pod, Kartik was pretty much intolerable at the beginning. Many of the best or better Premier League players are actually English. The problem is that the best MLS players aren't American. His lack of correlation was just baffling.
Yeah, I now they are English, but there was an era in the mid-2000s when the league was at its highest point, at its apex, where outside of Gerrard and Lampard, and I think Paul Scholes was, to me, always, to me, maybe the best player in the league, him and Ryan Giggs. But Scholes, for whatever reason, had retired from the England squad in 2004 or 2005, after the Euro 2004. There wasn't the best, the guys who were making the biggest impact in the Premier League, in the era where the Premier League was far and away the best league in the world, which I don't believe it is now, were largely your foreign players who were playing at your top four clubs. And even when you look at some of the traditional English clubs, like the Evertons and the West Hams and Spurs at the time, Spurs weren't a contender for Champions League at the time, they were bringing in a lot of good foreign players. Their better players tended to be foreign players. Now, if we're talking about the direct correlation now in 2018, some of the best players in the Premier League are English. I mean, I would argue Harry Kane and Raheem Sterling are maybe the two best attacking players in the league right now, or two of the top three or four attacking players. Eden Hazard is obviously on that list, but I'm talking about the era between 2005 and 2010, which was really the era of Premier League supremacy internationally. If you look back at that era of the top 20 or 25 players in the league, maybe three or four of them were English. And that's the situation we have in Major League Soccer. Of the top 25 players in Major League Soccer right now, I'd say one of them is American, and that player is probably moving to Leipzig in January. So that's what I was trying to argue. I'm not trying to argue the Premier League now versus MLS now. Premier League has done a great job. The rule where you have to have 8 homegrown players has worked. And if they bump it up to 12 or 13, which the FA might force on the Premier League, it's going to work even better. It might hurt the overall competitiveness of the league in Europe. Maybe it won't. Maybe it will. But I think it'll help the English national team, and by extension, the Welsh national team also, because they're part of that homegrown requirement.
All right, listeners, if you have any questions for us, any feedback, any rants or raves, if you agree with us, disagree with us, or need some advice on streaming or watching television, etc., let us know. You can always reach us through email at web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. So, guys, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. And Kartik, heading into another big club soccer weekend with MLS playoffs, Premier League matches. You got the derbies on Sunday. You got 3 derbies back to back to back, plus much, much more. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.